Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
Are you thinking about starting your wealth-creating journey, but not sure where to put your hard-earned dollars? InvestSmart can help. InvestSmart offers a free quiz that makes it easy to find the right InvestSmart ETF portfolio to help you reach your goals. Just visit investsmart.com.au and hit Get Started. Answer a few simple questions about your goals and how much you want to invest, and you'll get a tailored statement of advice with a portfolio recommendation. You can visit investsmart.com.au for a no obligations free statement of advice. This ad is brought to you by InvestSmart Advice, AFSL 334107.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Dr. Drew Meredith, how are you going?
You can't call me a doctor, but very well.
That's good. I can call you anything these days. Man who predicts interest rates.
I haven't made a prediction for this year yet, though, so we're still waiting on that one.
If you did have to make a prediction of interest rates in 2024, what would you be saying right now?
I'd say no cuts unless something really bad happens.
No cuts unless something really bad happens. Well, at least you gave the asterisk. A lot of people just make it.
No cuts.
Write a headline and then just like, yeah, whatever.
I think it's weird though that we're like the market prices in 25 basis point drops, but the RBA doesn't just, you know, tick rates down. If it's going to drop rates, it does so for a reason. And it usually doesn't just, let's try 25 basis points lower. Something has to really change. So the economy has to worsen. In that case, they're probably going to drop faster if it does.
So you're saying it would only go down if something bad happens?
Yeah, which means, and in that case, it'll drop 75 bips, not 25.
Okay. Interesting.
That's pretty bold.
So we've, regular listeners of the show, not to trust you too much, but anyone that's new here, we just talk. We're just a couple of guys talking about investing. So don't rely on it, as the disclaimer says.
Talk a little bit too much.
Yeah. But what have you been working on, man? What's the news?
I mean, plants. That was probably the theme
plants.
Of this week. Yeah, plants.
How so? What do you mean?
The week started with a bit of gardening, you know, taking out two of the most hated plants. And then I end up at the gardening show, or the garden flower show this weekend.
Yeah,
checking out a few things. It was actually for a meeting with Challenger, who provide annuities, had a massive kind of marquee and dining area set up at the garden show.
Right. So, okay. So, right.
There was a business link there. It wasn't just.
It's quite a transformation. So, you've gone from taking plants out to being a.
Researching all.
Going to the garden show. Yeah. Okay. That's fascinating stuff. What did you learn from Challenger? Challenger being the annuity provider for people in retirement.
Yeah. I think it's this kind of surge in interest in annuities is coming back. I think we've answered the question before. What's the difference between a bond and annuity? I can ask you that question maybe. But, you know, interest rates are higher and it's become a better time for people to retire or to invest as a retiree. And I talked to some of the people, I think a couple of the execs there, and it was basically no one really, and this is going to sound really bad, probably going to, you know, the audience is going to enjoy this, but everyone's worried about cost of living, higher interest rates at the moment. But there was essentially you were getting 0% return on your savings for the last 5, 6, 7 years. So, and that opens up a whole range of investments that we talk about every single week.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got the money, if you're later in life predominantly, it's actually a great time to be invested. It's a wonderful time because you've got higher term deposit rates, which means that in the stock market, you've got a higher yield typically. You can deploy capital when others are constrained. So for one side of town, it's actually a wonderful time to be invested in.
Yeah, we caught up with a fund manager this week. He had showed some stats from CBA, and it was like saving rates per age cohort, and savings rates are negative for anyone basically under 40, but for over 60, it was like 6.5% saving rate. So yeah. they're increasing, their discretionary spending's increasing, and we know where inflation's coming from.
Yeah, yeah. We know.
Man yelling at cloud, is that
how? Yeah. Oh, just a Simpsons reference.
Shay Carter.
Yeah. But it's true, right? Yeah, we. I think we talked about that a couple of months ago when Alan Collar started talking about it on his program, as they say overseas. So, yeah, cool. And I think a lot of people that haven't explored the idea of an annuity probably will do so in the next few years, because it does make more sense now that you can access a decent yield. And just so you know, the way the annuities work is they're basically backed by something underneath. So Challenger takes your money and promises a return, and they do that because they invest that money on the other side of the ledger. And that's basically how it works. What else, mate? What else is news? Anything else?
A lot. I mean, I just wrote a short article about SMSFs.
What'd you say?
Well, we're seeing there's a bit of a, and it's not a pronounced trend, it's probably very anecdotal as well, but we're seeing a little bit of pushback against SMSFs from the older age groups at the moment. Like some of the biggest uptake for SMSFs we saw in the ATO data last year was 35 to 45 year olds. So there's this interest in engagement and having control over superannuation assets when people are younger. And there's almost this trend towards simplification when they're getting older. Maybe that's just the type of people we're talking to. We know benefits of SMSFs are clear. They're fixed costs rather than a percentage for most of them. They give you complete transparency, and there's flexibility to execute a whole number of strategies. But the quality of platforms and other alternatives like trading platforms and super platforms has increased so much, and I think all costs have come down. So that's like a little anecdotal trend I'm seeing. But
so do you reckon more people will be using SMSFs in 10 years from now?
I think the trend is there, and I think they're uniquely suited to retirement. But there seems to be, for maybe the current cohort, that it's because of the last few years, people are looking to simplify.
Mm.
And maybe that's just like 2 out of 100 people. And maybe I'm just, the old annualization rule times it by 12. And
you've got
a data set.
That's an annual rate, mate. Yeah. Property price is falling 32%. That's what you'll be saying next. So there was, we did put in the headline for this week that there's a black swan S&P 500 stock market crash coming. Drew, why do they call it a black swan?
I did not know until we talked about this beforehand and Googled it. And I mean, this is a great kind of example of what happens in investment markets, that we called it a black swan event, because apparently in England, they traditionally thought there were no black swans, all swans were white. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, when something happened like the pandemic or the GFC, which is considered a black swan event, which is something that is unexpected, no one sees coming, but has a major impact, until they travel to Australia and realize there are black swans everywhere. So I'm not sure what the swan event is anymore, but it's kind of that, it's, if you think this is what I'm trying to be better at these at storytelling, but it's like if you focus too much on one thing and too much of almost a home bias or what you can see in front of you, well, you miss out on everything that's out here, particularly in Australia.
So why would we be suggesting then that, why would we be putting this in the headline tongue in cheek? A lot of people are saying to me, Drew, that they think, well, the US market's done so well, it must be overvalued. Thoughts?
I mean, all three benchmarks hit an all-time high last night, the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ. So the thing about indices is they're made up of a small group of larger companies, as we discussed last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I just get, we see the trend every time in the media. When the market's falling, it's never going to stop falling. And when it's going up, it's never going to, it's in a bubble territory. So I think fear sells headlines, but I don't see any, apart from a black swan event, or whatever kind of swan, apart from a black swan event, you can say it's overvalued, but earnings have been keeping up consistently, and it's the biggest companies in the world that have been driving its return.
If I was to ask you then, Mr. Drew, what is the forward price earnings ratio, the price to earnings, PE, however you want to say it, what is the price earnings ratio on the NASDAQ 100?
42 times.
Is that your honest guess?
Yeah, that's a guess.
Okay. Well, according to the end of February, which is when I've got the data here from BetaShares because they have the NDQ ETF, it was 26 times.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I think historical average is over 20. So one of the things to keep in mind, folks, is that just because the price goes up does not make something overvalued. It's not like a pair of shoes. Just because you pay more for it means it's more expensive. If the underlying value of that thing goes up, then it's not overvalued. It just means that it's got a higher price. And so the earnings per share, when you calculate the PE ratio, is going up because the companies are becoming much, much more profitable. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, I think there's probably a risk with the NASDAQ 100, which is that it is quite concentrated on a few stocks. Being that magnificent seven, like Tesla and Nvidia and Amazon and all that. So that's real. But at the end of the day, the valuation of that isn't as extreme as probably some people think, Drew.
Yeah, so you get share price returns come from two things, which is, you know, earnings, as you're saying, earnings increases, earnings per share. And companies like Nvidia, which are increasing earnings 300, 400, 500 times compared to last year, mean that the earnings of the index is going up. In Australia, it's kind of the opposite, where earnings have been broadly flat or falling and multiples have increased. And we talked about that last week, where the PE multiple for the banking sector has increased significantly. And that's where most of the increase in the ASX 200 has come from. So it's important to understand the two key drivers of returns, but historically it's earnings that have driven the increasing value of a company. You can't rely on getting the same PE multiple for a company every year.
So what is the price earnings ratio of the ASX 200? I'm using the IOZ ETF from iShares.
I'm going to say that's 16.
Oh, it's overvalued then by your standards. 18.
Yeah.
Would you rather pay 18 times for the Australian market or 26 times for the NASDAQ?
Can I have both?
That's a good answer. Yes, you can.
I mean, the thing is, the PE is one single factor, and it's so low because it's full of mining and banking companies, comparatively, where the other ones, and there's not much earnings growth there, the other one's growing quickly. I'd probably say the NASDAQ, not saying to buy the NASDAQ, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you get a yield of like 4% on the Aussie market, and you don't get, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's not quite nearly that high on the oh, yeah, it's so the yield on the Aussie market is around about 4%. The yield on the NASDAQ is around about 1.9. So that kind of puts that income versus growth debate, like couches it in some data for you. So is the stock market going to crash? Well, we don't know is the answer. So
and the answer is generally yes. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah. Well, by definition, we're getting closer to the next one than we are the last one. So
you see like 25% drops in 20 years, and you see like 10% drops in the last 20 years. So something is always going to change.
If you're going to invest for the next 5 years, you can safely assume that you're going to experience a market crash of 20%, because that's what the data says. And only one of those. So here's a really simple way that I think about this, Drew, is once in every 5 years, the market crashes. One in every five of those crashes turns into a really bad bear market. Yeah. So that would be like a GFC where it stays down for a long time. But one of those crashes could be COVID, where it bounces straight off the bottom and back up again and it just flies off. You just don't know. And one of the things that some people believe is that you can dodge them by avoiding those market crashes. But unfortunately, what happens with a lot of those investors is they get out of the market too early and they miss the final leg up of growth before it falls. And in that final leg up is actually when the market can grow significantly. So that's why you find in the data that the worst days in the stock market are often right next to the best days in terms of their single day performance. And so it basically means that it's impossible to judge which day is going to be good and which day is going to be bad in a market crash.
And the best days usually come after the worst, not like the best years come after the worst years, not straight away. And you can never tell it's about to turn.
Yeah. Yeah. We could cut the data up and anyone else could cut the data up and you could find these kind of like random, what seem like patterns, but they're just randomness. But at the end of the day, what we're saying is, and what Drew and I kind of talk about a lot, is not necessarily timing the market. It's about building a portfolio that can live through that. And you can tell the tale on the other side. I think that's probably the the lowest stress way to get through it. Just before we get to a topic for this week, which is about cash flow systems, Drew, I wanted to ask you about, because Investment Noob wrote into us and asked a question about it. Commercial property. Maybe.
Depends on which part. Like, I think, but this is also the story of financial markets is you've got talking up on one side how bad commercial property is and there's going to be opportunities and things have fallen 30%. And then on the other side, you've got these piece saying how there's opportunities popping up everywhere for people who are ready. We've talked about the CLW, the kind of diversified property trusts, and we know there's an average discount of something like 30% to net tangible assets.
That's the Charter Hall Long Whale REITs, ASX, CLW. Yep.
We're kind of seeing a bit of a turnaround there, and there's definitely pockets of opportunity. I think there's in direct commercial property, there's all kinds of things happening. We know Victoria's increased land tax and a lot of different taxes, which are making, you know, skinny yields on residential, some commercial property even skinnier. And you're seeing a bit of a trend towards simplification. Then debt rates have gone up too, so interest rates have gone up. So for a lot of these trusts, the income and distributions they can make are forced lower because their expenses have gone up.
Charter Hall Long Whale REIT up 2.7% for the year over year, still down about 11%, but yeah, something to keep in mind. So that's a diversified REIT, real estate investment trust, that invests in all different types of property, and that's what makes it so appealing amongst some investors. You get like service stations, you get all types of stuff in that thing. And the whale part, WALE, stands for the weighted average lease expiry. And basically it's across the whole property portfolio, how long have they got in terms of the number of years before the leases expire on those properties. And it's a good indicator of how much income you're going to get and those types of things. So we did have a question that came through from Investment Noob, and maybe we can just talk about this for the next 5 minutes, because it's less investing, but it's more financial planning and how to structure things day to day before we get into some questions from folks. And as always, we don't know your personal circumstances, so it's important that you speak to a licensed, trusted, and an advisor that you can get along with. So you can look up a financial advisor in the Money Smart website. It's moneysmart.gov.au. Or you can send Drew here a message about retirement financial planning. The team at Wattle Partners, Drew's email address is drew@wattlepartners.com.au. He actually does love hearing from you. He does send me some screenshots of some really nice conversations that he has with some of you. So please keep getting in contact with him if you are after retirement financial planning. There is also a link in your show notes that is for financial planning, mortgage broking, and those type of things. Please read the product disclosure statement of ETF, super funds, et cetera, before we go on and talk about those things. So,
I've got a question for you, actually.
Wait, Junk Bonds just wrote in. Junk Bonds just wrote in and said, we are in a recession. Builders collapsing. Yeah, there are builders going out of business. So, okay, is it a quick question?
I actually had that in my notes here, that there's been increasing wave of insolvencies. I think it's up something like 40% on the same month last year. That can be for different reasons. But construction, hospitality, and retail businesses are struggling. So, and I think the numbers show, you know, for junk bonds, per capita recession, as we've said in the past, immigration is kind of driving the growth in the economy, and we've been in a per capita recession for quite a while.
Yeah,
which means we're only growing because more people are coming to the country rather than we're growing our income and asset base more as a population.
So we're saying you pro innovation,
always. Pro-productivity.
Pro-productivity. Okay, yeah.
I had a question for you.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the question?
There's a lot been happening lately. So the most interesting country or region, could be personal, could be investment-based at the moment. I'm going to do investment-based.
The most interesting country?
Yeah. Maybe let's say from an investment perspective.
From an investment perspective, well, probably
I don't often stump you. This is
probably the USA, I would say, mate, because that's what I'm finding. That's most interesting to me. I'm pro America. No, but seriously, I think that the innovation there is second to none. They've got no tall poppy syndrome, which is wonderful for their society. But if you had to, if you wanted me to answer this with a spreadsheet, I'd probably say China.
Yeah,
because any fifth grader that can jump in and do a little bit of spreadsheet calculations could tell you that Chinese stocks look cheap. But the thing is, they've looked cheap for 10 years. So what is yours then?
Japan.
Now Marco did get it. He's got it in the chat.
He got me,
He's back.
I mean, they just increased interest rates for the first time in years out of negative rates.
Oh, so you're saying interesting, not as interesting like as an investment idea. You're just saying
As an investment idea too. You know, the currency is pretty weak, so you got to be careful on hedging. But they're one of the early innovators. They've, you know, there's a massive transformation happening in their kind of corporate part of the market. They haven't had the inflation problem that anyone else have that anyone else had, and now their central banks move rates from zero to 0.1 or negative to zero to 0.1.
Well, that's a big step up. Interesting, says Mark. And Junk Bond said, since the last crisis, Canada. Canada also had a big property problem a few years ago, Junk Bonds. This is about 10 years ago. Well, pre-GFC, really. They really struggled to, like, to the property prices to move. And people thought Australia was basically the next Canada a couple of years ago. So they're now facing the same housing crisis that we're facing, probably because of their immigration, which is even higher than Australia. So Investment Noob wrote in and said, new to the pod, that's interesting, more recently more or less having to start again with finances. I want to build up an emergency fund, a normal savings, and invest in ETFs. So there's three things they want to do: emergency fund, savings, and invest. What would be the best way to split up my extra income in those three buckets? Drew, I wanted to use Investment Noob's question, which anyone can send in a question, by the way, through the link in the show notes that says ask a question, select the Australian Investors Podcast. How do you manage your money? Like, what's inside your wallet, mate?
I'm probably a bad person to ask for this.
Okay.
It's like it's all emergency savings.
Okay. The siren is constantly singing over your head.
Mine's a bit. Mine's probably a bit different because we have multiple businesses. So our kind of the investment, I see my investment as being my investment in businesses and the different businesses we run.
Yeah.
Which means I'm less concerned about, you know, investing into that portfolio of ETFs. It's probably more risky and less diversified. So I take more of that investment focus in superannuation. And then personally, still got a mortgage. So it's everything basically is going to an offset account at the moment. Mm. And the next thing would be looking at how do you, whether it's recycle that debt into something else. But that's probably the boring one. It literally just all goes into a offset.
Yeah, fair enough. And it probably should. With interest rates on mortgages at about 6.5%, if you've got a mortgage, you wouldn't be crazy, but you'd be close to crazy to use a savings account over an interest over an offset account. But I think if you were saving money for like in cash permanently, you would want to be using a term deposit right now.
Yeah.
Because if interest rates do fall, the in effect rate that you earn from your offset account does fall with it. So retirees and those types of things, Drew, I imagine, are using more term deposits because they probably don't have the offset account anyway.
Savings rates and discretionary income have gone up, or discretionary spending.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will add a few things. Our money just comes in. It's all automated after payday, just splits up automatically. And any excess savings goes into the offset account. But then there's savings for short and, well, probably medium-term and long-term goals. So a medium-term goal was, for example, going to Europe this year. And that's automated. So we save into that account. And then basically the investing is automated as well. So there's no real like secret sauce, but if I was starting again with an emergency fund, normal savings and investing, I would always choose the emergency fund first because the emergency fund is savings. Yeah, yeah. To get to your level, because there's no point investing without an emergency fund. Cause if you have to sell some ETFs, pardon me, or some shares because you don't have an emergency fund, cause your car blows up, or you have to put $3,500 new brake pads on your car. Very specific, I know. I wonder why. If you had to put new brake pads on your car and you didn't anticipate it,
I mean, my friend didn't accept the quote.
So, yeah, it's the most expensive brake pads I've ever heard. But if you did need brake pads at $3,500, as Junk Bond's saying, now's a great time to build your emergency fund. Build that emergency fund first and then look at investing because it's the cheapest insurance policy anyone could ever need. Okay, so we've had some good questions come through. Joe did say that he would have said India is the most interesting. I think that's really interesting. Melanie wants a view on Woodside at $30. But we do have two questions that We had to get to, I'll get to one of them maybe because we're probably going to run out of time. There was a question that came through from Fashion Phil. I think it was about a week or two ago. And did write in and said, hi, Owen and Drew, would you mind taking a look at this company, Campify, ASXCHL? We'd love to hear your comments on the podcast. So one of the things that we do, Fashion Phil, is we talk a lot about investing, but we don't always dive into the weeds on an individual company. So I will do that. Like, I love it, by the way, as you know. I'm going to share my screen for anyone that's watching on YouTube. You can play along. I'm just in the ticker terminal. If anyone listening, I will voice it out for you. Campify is a business. It's basically like an Airbnb for camper vans and that type of a thing. And you can see that reflected in its financials. So revenue since 2019 to 2023 has gone from $1.6 million of revenue to $38 million. That is a huge step change in revenue. So obviously, gleaning just from the financial statements, the income statement, you can see here that the income is going up.
Is this part of like Apollo Caravans or anything going there, or is this different?
I do not know the answer to this, Drew. I do not know the answer to this. Maybe Junk Bonds, who says write a review, may know. So we can also see gross profit has gone up from – so gross profit margin is effectively the difference between the cost of delivering a service and the revenue. And the gross profit on the $38 million is now $26 million. So you're starting to see a really good gross profit margin, 67%. The thing is, the company is still – it's hit an inflection point. Because the operating income, or basically what's left after the expenses, like marketing and all that sort of thing, administrative costs and all that, that has gone, it's become more positive, even though they've spent more. So you're starting to see the business in a position where it could actually reach that inflection point. But at the end of the day, the first thing that I look at a business like this is if you're earning revenues like this, is what is your cost control? And second of all, where did that revenue growth come from? So if I was looking at this business and I had 5 minutes to do it, I would look at the revenue, but then what other things I would look at is like, how is the business funded? And one of the ways early stage businesses are funded is you go down and you look at how many shares are outstanding, because there's two ways to get money into your business. You can issue debt, someone can give you a loan, or you can sell shares in your publicly listed company to fund growth. And using that, you can then take that money and you can make an acquisition, which makes your revenue growth look really good. But at the end of the day, if you're just buying revenue by acquiring other businesses, it's not a good way to grow. So you want to know how they are spending the money. We can see that since 2021, the number of shares outstanding for Campify have gone from 28 million to around 57 million. So that's issuing shares to do something. I'd want to know where that money is going and how it is being invested, because you can't just issue an infinite amount of shares. You could ask ABC Learning or G8 Education, not too bad. But a lot of roll-up companies that just go out and issue shares. My old saying is, be there for a good time, not a long time. So I'm not saying that
what you're saying there is, in investment terms, is momentum. Like, there are periods when momentum can carry these businesses to significant valuations. We saw it during the pandemic, but sometimes you got to pay the piper. Is that the that's all?
Look at us just bringing out these phrases.
Geez. Well, you got to convert revenue to profit. Yeah. And this is like, you talk to any portfolio manager buying stocks in the last, or we were talking to a small cap manager the other day, and they talked a lot about how it was all adding to the revenue line, but nothing was adding to the earnings line. And yep. At some point, it has to add to the revenue line, because earnings is what really matters. You're investing in businesses. If they're not generating profit at some point, then they're not going to be worth more than they were before.
Yeah. So, and this is what here you can see. I've just jumped into the half year report for 2024. Thank you, Market Index. Total bookings for the half year increased 59% to 44,782. So that is the type of thing that I want to see. Is I want to see organic growth. I want to see growth in the actual business itself. And you can see they're talking about revenue growth and all this type of thing. And basically what you want to be able to do is see more of that growth coming from the core business, not from acquisitions, not from any of that stuff. From actually the core business. Because if you buy a company today, you're getting the future revenue stream, not the past. So you want to know that the future is repeatable. It has a business model that's repeatable. And in the case of a marketplace or a platform such as this, you want to make sure as best you can that the business itself has caught traction. A lot of platforms need either the demand side, so that's where people are hiring camper vans, or the supply side, where people are leasing camper vans, You want to make sure that one of those sides has caught on. It's like Uber in the early days. Uber is basically synonymous with the idea of ride sharing. It basically became the ride sharing market because it caught on with consumers. I'll just Uber there. That's what people say. So you want to make sure it's able to do that, and that's where you get that flywheel.
This could be completely off topic, but we talk about inflation. This is what we do. We go off topic. Mm-hmm. But we talk about inflation and the kind of cost of living everywhere. But we probably forget, you know, companies like Uber and a lot of the other, you know, direct-to-consumer companies were loss leaders forever. And the cost of all these things has also gone up. It's because they were losing money before. It's probably something that's kind of forgotten in this transition we're going through at the moment. Mm. Now Uber makes money.
Yeah. Well, see, that's so that's really interesting. So Uber now makes money because they've realized they can charge more to consumers. They can also give the drivers less because they're now dependent on it. And they can offer ancillary services or extra add-ons.
Unless you're in a Tesla. You get paid more if you're in a Tesla.
Well, also, I think because you don't pay for fuel, I was chatting to a guy in Sydney during the week, and he was driving the long-range Tesla. This is my brother in Sydney. And
did you get any stop tips?
No, he didn't. But, you know, respect for him for driving a Tesla. He said that he wouldn't do it if he couldn't do it with an electric car because it would be too costly. Yeah. So that's quite interesting. Junk Bonds, you did say that Campify has 18 reviews. No, 1.8 stars from 18 reviews. Yeah, well, maybe they'll get a few more than that. But yeah. Okay.
You know, people only review companies that are unhappy with them, I've
found. Yeah, most of the time. Yeah. Most of the time. So.
Not supporting them, just a guess. Yeah.
Just a guess. Yeah. Yeah. We did have a question come through live here. So why don't we just have a look at this, Drew? How would you diversify large caps? The big dividend payers are mining and banking in the ASX 200, but then you lay diversification outside of the two sectors. So how do you deal with diversifying, Drew? A lot of people this are Aussie-centric.
I was going to write an article on this too. So diversifying your Australian share allocation. I mean, we apply a core satellite approach, and I think there's an issue.
Didn't you tell me before this? You said core satellite my ass.
Can we say that on air?
Yeah.
beep. Sorry. I think there's too much of like this or that in financial services, like value or growth, active or passive, mm-hmm. core or satellite. And I think we're in an industry and you're seeing a massive trend towards you can capture the average market return for next to nothing. So that's the ASX and that's the part that's overweight to banks and financial services. But that's not all right for everyone. That's fine if you're young and you're contributing. But once you get to retirement, we think you need to limit that volatility and the average return isn't always what we want. So how do you diversify around that? And we do that. It's called core satellite. So your core is your index and your satellite is your diversification. And we do it in Australia, you do it via market capitalization. So the size of a company, you start adding smaller, medium, and in some cases, micro companies. So that's it.
Not through active strategies.
Yeah. And I think, and that's what the one sector of active management that is consistently, you know, more than 50% of active managers in those sectors tend to outperform, which is the opposite of large cap active managers. And then we look at it in putting global to the side in other ways, which is you're exposed to two sectors effectively in the ASX. So how do we get more exposure to healthcare that doesn't really exist there? Or utilities or renewables or technology, and then you try and complement your core by adding things like that. And we've talked about the equal weighted VanEck MVW quite a few times. Yeah. So that's like the counter to a highly concentrated ASX core.
Yeah, that's a good point. You can use MVW beside like VAS or IOZ or A200 or any of those. You've got to be mindful that the MVW ETF has about 100 stocks, or at least that's what it should be tracking broadly. And at the end of the day, they're still correlated, so they still move together. But you'd get a little bit of diversification benefit from not having a huge exposure to just the BHP and the CBA. It kind of diversifies away a little bit of that. So you probably want to do more than just MVW by itself. Melanie did follow up with a question about Woodside. Drew, do you have a view on Woodside?
It's in our kind of 20 stock model at the moment. And it's, you know, a massive oil and gas player.
Yep.
I think it's always going to be cyclical. And despite, you know, I mean, coal and everything else being turned off is going to be a positive for that. I think if you were a smaller player, you'd be less relevant, but Woodside has kind of increased its, you know, importance within the market. But no, it's a long version of saying we're not heavily negative and we're not heavily positive. We think it's turned into a reasonable dividend payer and diversifier for a kind of iron ore heavy call.
Oh, well said. That's good, mate. On the fly. I like it. Thanks for that, Melanie. So the Chihuahua of Wall Street wrote in and said, thanks for producing a great podcast. Oh, well, no worries, Chihuahua. We'll let Monique know. I'm rapidly approaching retirement and looking at the proportion of invested funds within and outside of super. Assuming an equal rate of return, is there an easy formula to balance funds in accumulation phase above TBC? You have to just
explain what the balance cap.
Yep. Transfer balance cap. And funds outside of super to maximize after-tax returns. So is there an easy way to equalize or balance the funds between super and outside of super?
So you got the right question here, which is talking about tax rates. And one thing, we've had a lot of meetings this week, and it's actually looking at what your average tax rate is. So we too often think about what the marginal tax rate is, but your average tax rate, even if you're on the top marginal tax rate, isn't 46.5%. It's actually a fair bit lower. Generally, what we try and say is you want 2/3 in super and 1/3 outside super when you get to retirement, depending on what your position is, simply because the tax benefits in superannuation are incredible. I've never said incredible in that context before.
Oh, wow. Getting excited.
Yeah. And I know there's no simple rule, but basically, one, it depends. It will definitely depend on what level of assets you already have outside superannuation. But generally, even a 15% tax rate, which is what you pay in accumulation versus 0% in pension phase, is likely to be better than holding those funds directly in your own name. Historically, you could have, as an over 65-year-old retiree, you could have up to like $400,000 or $500,000 in investable assets outside super before you pay any real tax because of the offsets that you get. But more recently, with interest rates going up, that income level gets hit much quicker. So I think if superannuation is completely cashable once you hit retirement and you meet a condition of release. So it's like if you can have it all in there, why not?
A lot of people do recontribution strategies though, Drew. You know, people do things such as they take money out of super to then recontribute it for tax benefits as well. So that's something that people can talk to their financial advisor about, and the reason that that may have a different tax treatment when you recontribute it to super is a really good thing to keep on top of. There's also other things that may be able to help people here, such as like a downsizer payment, which may or may not affect caps going into super. There's also 30,000 dollars is the new concessional contribution, the limit that you'll be able to contribute concessionally to super after June 30th. So these are the types of things. If you're a small business owner, which a lot of the RAS community are, if you're a small business owner, talk to your financial advisor about the small business concessions and what that can do for juicing your super, because it is, my understanding of it, is one of the most important things that you probably never thought existed, and it could seriously change your life. So go and check those out. Plenty of other things to go and check out there. Drew, we've probably only got about another 5 minutes, and maybe we'll get to Joe's question in a moment about the best way to maximize the benefits of an SMSF. But please keep your questions coming in. We're a bit short on time this week, but next week, every Saturday morning, you know that we go live effectively for the Australian Investors Podcast 2 Cents segment. It's been a bit of a hectic week for the two of us, so we're a bit short on time this week, and we do apologize sincerely. Normally, we like to riff for about an hour, because we'd riff for all day if we could, but we just try and get to an hour and just keep it sensible for everyone.
We're doing some new venues too. Is that what you were texting me about this week?
Yes. So that's actually worth sharing.
I wasn't sure if you were joking or not. I just said yes.
No. I'd love to. So I was saying to Drew this week via text, I said, Drew, wouldn't it be lovely if we could do a 2 Cents recording on the beach
Love it. I mean, yes. That's what I mean straight away.
Yeah. So we're going to do a recording from the beach somewhere this year. Just a beach. We don't know which beach it will be. Maybe it will be the Gold Coast if we go up for an event that may or may not be happening.
We're going to tell people we're there and see if anyone actually listens to us.
And then I also wanted to do a Two Cents recording from the forest. There's a rainforest near us, or not a rainforest, but a forest near us here on the outskirts of eastern Melbourne. So I'd love to get up in the greenery and do a recording live from the bush. So we've probably got time for two more questions. So we've got It's a Cruel World wrote in and said, "Hi, Owen and the good doctor. Love the pod. I'm a long-term listener and first-time emailer." Well, that's good. Better, you know, start somewhere. I started dabbling in individual businesses about 2015 and bought some shares without too much of a plan. I bought these based on a recommendation of a couple investment services I used to subscribe to and tips from people at work. Why not? I have since graduated, this is a good way to put it, I've since graduated to a more methodical approach of dollar cost averaging into broad index ETFs. This is what you were saying earlier on, Drew, on a monthly basis, and keep a little spare cash on the side in case there is an emergency or a company I like, such as ResMed, which I bought during the recent Ozempic saga. That would have been a great purchase, buying ResMed at that time. There are some businesses that I find attractive at the moment, not many, and I'd like to purchase a share of, but I need to raise some cash beforehand. And this is the question. If you are holding shares in businesses which you are losing or have lost conviction in and are mostly losses, is it prudent to sell these businesses to purchase businesses you have higher conviction in and are of a higher quality? True.
I mean, this is one of the behavioral issues that comes with investing, isn't it? Like loss aversion. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the areas where an advisor can add value, which is they're not attached to these businesses. And when people come in, sometimes they don't become clients because we tell them they need to sell some of the stocks that you're talking about. But for us, it's like opportunity cost. Yes, it might have an opportunity to go back to that value, but what's the premise of that value? That's what you thought it was worth when you bought it. So how do you remove that and look at what the other growth or income or alternative opportunities are that you could be using that for? So, I mean, objectively, if something's not working and the turnaround is a significant or if things have changed significantly, it's just an easy remove it, remove emotion, and deploy capital into something we think has better growth opportunities long term. But that's easy for us to say and harder for individual investors to do.
Yeah. I wrote an article a while ago. You might be able to Google it, A Cruel World.
Not to brag.
I wrote an article a little while ago. No, it's not nothing like that. On 10 reasons that people sell shares. And two of those reasons are really important to me. One is what Drew was talking about, which is basically opportunity cost. Like if you've got a reason to sell something because you're buying something better, then that can happen because of rebalancing. It can happen because you've got a better idea. That's a good strategy as long as someone's mindful of tax. Accumulators pay tax when they sell. But the other reason that someone, I believe, should sell is if their thesis is broken. And that's easier said than done. You form a thesis when you research an investment. And you make a decision to sell because that reason for owning is no longer valid. And the best example would be you invest in a company and you think that company's products and services are going to dominate the industry. A new competitor arrives. You didn't see that coming. And you're like, well, they're not going to win now. This is a good reason to sell. And another reason might be management leaving or something like that. All right, Drew, I need you to give us a dad joke. And while you whip that together and you Google it and he panics, sweats breaking out on Drew Meredith's face. Craig says, "Hi guys, thoughts on LaserBond? LaserBond is a surface engineering business. It's just an engineering business from Sydney. It's got factories all over Australia, run by the Hooper family. I really like the business, Craig. It's probably, you could probably say, quote unquote, stumbled a little bit in the last couple of years. It's just been, it's an engineering business. It's not a tech business. It's not one of those types of businesses. But speaking of theses." The Hooper family, in my opinion, and Wayne's involvement in the business is really important for me. And I see that I think it's actually a really high quality business. It's just small. It's a liquid. And it's got multiple ways of winning, but it's going to take time. That's what would be my two cents on that. So Drew's got a quick dad joke for us.
Yeah, this is really, really put myself under pressure here. I'm going to try this one. What do you call a flower that runs on electricity?
Well, I don't know, mate.
A power plant.
I should have seen that one coming.
I tried to keep with the, you know, the flower and plant show vibe. Yeah. I didn't bring my book this time. It wasn't a lot.
You pulled that together really well. That's come full circle, mate. Well done. Yeah. Melanie, you did ask about Sigma shares. Please, anyone that you didn't get your questions answered, please write into us. Use the link in the show notes. So it's in every RASC podcast. There's a link that says ask a question. Select the Australian Investors podcast for the show. We answer questions every Saturday morning, but we also answer questions on the other shows. So whichever show you listen to regularly, do that. And if you are joining us live, or if you do just want to share a bit of feedback with me, if you do listen to this at a later time, please, we are thinking of bringing back our live show. So yes, Drew and I are going live right now, but we are thinking of bringing back the live show. Many of you loved it in 2021 to 2023. We are thinking of bringing that back. It does take a lot of effort for us to put on. So if you do want us to do it, please let me know in the comments. Please let me know in the chat. Please write into us. It will go live at least once every week, is the current indication. It's a wonderful chance just to come and chat to your hosts at the RASC Network and get some questions answered on investing, property, business, whatever. So if you want that back, please let us know, because we're going back to the drawing board this month. We did get a lot of questions this week, which we haven't had the chance to answer. I do apologize sincerely. I absolutely love them. You can reach Drew at drew@wattlepartners.com.au. If you did get your question on the show this week, remember you do get a copy of Drew's new book, The Golden Years, How to Not Stuff It Up. Now, what is it, Drew?
How to live a successful and enjoyable retirement.
Yeah. Okay. So the book is The Golden Years. It is out in April. There is a big stack of them in the office. So if you did write in a question, you did get your question answered on the show, please let us know. You can send an email to us at RASC and we will organize to send you a book when we are able to ship them. So many great questions this week. I like the question from Investment Noob on how would you balance your three priorities of an emergency fund, a savings account, and investing in ETFs. Investment Noob, please write into us. You get a value investor program for free. That's $499 course, yours for free. So thank you everyone for joining us. Thank you, Marco, Melanie, Junk Bonds, Craig, everyone that joined us live. Thank you so much, Joe, everyone, because we will want to be doing more of these live in the future. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Australian Investors Podcast. Drew Sun, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called RASC Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. RASC Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. RASC Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the RASC Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.